Uncover how your students learn best with the Kaleidoscope Profile. Available in both print and online formats, K-Scope reveals the sensory styles, perceptual styles, and temperament styles that influence how individual students prefer to work and view the world. Discover more at plsclasses.com/kscope.
Hello, and welcome to the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. For the last 35 years, I've had the opportunity to learn with educators at all levels, both nationally and internationally. In each of the coming episodes, I'll explore my thoughts and my learning on a variety of topics connected to teaching, learning, and leading. Thanks for listening in. Teaching and coaching with learning style preferences. In this podcast, I'd like to look through the lens of two learning style preferences. First, sensory preferences, and then organizational preferences. Sensory preferences refers to people's preference for taking in information, kind of perceiving the world through visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and or tactual options. Now, all of us use all of those sensory preferences, and some of us have milder to stronger preferences. Those with a visual preference prefer to see and watch, observe, like the idea of somebody modeling something that I'm about to do, and I can remember the picture of their model when it comes my turn. Visual folks tend to see the world more in pictures, tend to be a little bit stronger and faster readers. Auditory learners have a preference for listening and talking. So having something explained to me becomes critical in my learning. And equally, auditory learners have a need to talk. So it's important in the classroom that a teacher who's doing a lot of auditory presentation allow time for visual students to turn that into a picture, turn it into notes, create an opportunity for the auditory learner to turn and talk to someone about what they just heard. Your kinesthetic learner has a need to move. It's kind of a large muscle movement. They learn best if they have the freedom to build that movement in when they need it. I have a friend who is a medical student, and when you watch her study, she is pacing on the patio back and forth as she's reading her notes out loud. So she's combining that auditory and kinesthetic. And then tactual is connected to smaller muscles. So the tactual learner wants to touch, wants to manipulate. You'll often see the tactual learner when they're listening having a need to be playing with their hair or a necklace or rubbing their finger across their lips. And tactual students also have a need to be comfortable. So relationships tend to become important to the tactual learner. Very difficult for a tactual learner to learn from a teacher that they don't like. That emotion throws them off. I've worked with students who've attended small high schools with small classes, and then they're headed off to a college where they might be in a freshman class with several hundred people in the auditorium. And I'll describe to the tactual learners that they may have a need to walk up and ask the professor a question before the class starts. And that opportunity to close distance and make that connection with the professor allows the student to go back to their seat and find it easier to listen and take in the information that's being presented. Now, As you look at implementing this in the classroom, the two words that I like to put forth to teachers are rotate and empower. And by rotate, I'm suggesting that the teacher look at their instructional practices across a week or across a unit and identify where the opportunities for the different learners are making themselves present. There's often a tendency as teachers for our instruction to be influenced by our own learning preference. So when I teach something, it might be influenced by my preference. And then when kids don't get it and I look at reteaching it and in my mind I'm thinking, how can I make it easier? I can fall into the trap of taking it deeper into my preference instead of switching. A strategy I like to apply here is if you can get the staff to look at their learning styles and actually list them on a chart in the staff lounge, I encourage teachers that when they're struggling with a student, the thing to do is go down to the staff lounge and find the teacher on staff whose style is most opposite of yours. And if you went to that teacher and asked them how they would teach this content, chances are good off the top of their head is an idea that would take a lot of creativity for me to come up with because it's so different from my style. So consider having students experiment and find out what works best for them. So as an example, you might set up some time in your classroom for students to study vocabulary. And imagine creating four corners around your room. And in one corner, the students have an opportunity to look at the vocabulary words and their definitions and to create some drawings that illustrate the word with its definition, kind of a visual approach. And over another spot for auditory, students are reading the definitions and their partners reading the vocabulary word back and forth. And then they might work together to come up with a story or a set of sentences that that use as many of the words as they can fit in. Meanwhile, your tactual learners might prefer to be working with some cards that they can match, an index cards that have the vocabulary words on them, and then separate cards with the definition and mixed up. They're matching them up, and they're doing that in a pair so that the social element is there for the tactual learner. And then the kinesthetics might have a spot where they're making up movements. Creating a body movement that illustrates the definition of the word. And so giving kids the opportunity to experiment and figure out what seems to assist them the most, and then creating as many student choice options in your classroom as possible where kids can choose and request the style preferences that make learning more relaxed. Consider when I have to work outside my style, which all of us do at times, it takes an increased effort on my part. So as an example, visual is the lowest of my preference rating. And so the most difficult task for me is to look at those directions that come with a piece of IKEA furniture to put together, and you've got to translate the picture. They don't even tell you in words what it is you're supposed to do. That takes a very high degree of effort on my part to execute. The other style preference I'd take a look at is organizational style. The difference between a preference for sequential or global. So sequential preferences like things to be 1, 2, 3, A, B, C. First we do this, then we do that. Don't be bringing me that before we finish this. That kind of laid out in those steps. Folks with a global preference kind of have a big picture view. They kind of want to know the end before we get started at the beginning. They want to know the whole before they work with the parts. Random is sometimes used to describe global learners, as is the word holistic. I kind of use two examples that that jump out at me. One is if you take a look at folks cooking, your more sequential people tend to get out the recipe, even though they've made this frequently. They'll get out all the ingredients called for in the recipe. They may line the ingredients up in the order that they appear in the recipe. They'll have all their pots and pans and utensils that they need before they actually begin the cooking activity. The global person has the kids yell, "What's for dinner?" And the global mom or dad stand in front of the open refrigerator door saying, "I don't know." And after they stand there a while, voila, out jumps the idea for dinner. Frequent for the global learner is that halfway through dinner, they have to make a quick trip to the store to get something, because it's only then that they realize they don't have everything they need for what they decided to make. You'll find the same thing headed off to shop for cooking. That high sequential learner has a grocery list. The real high sequential people have their grocery list in the order that the items will be found in the store where they shop. Okay. Global people go grocery shopping with a cart. Okay, they walk in the door and they start up and down the aisles, and they really don't know what's going to be jumping into their cart as they work their way through. The other spot I encourage people to do is just take a look inside the closet, so where the clothing are kept. Your sequential learner will have a sequence to the things in the closet. That's winter, spring, summer, fall, color-coded, long sleeve to mid-length sleeve to short sleeve to sleeveless. High sequentials, the shoes are found directly underneath the outfit that they go with. Global learners looking for their clothing know it's either in the house or the car. Now, it's real important, because very often sequential folks take a look at global people and think that they aren't organized. But global folks know exactly where something is in the midst of a whole set of piles on the desk. Nothing worse for a global person than a sequential person cleaning up and putting things away, and then the global person can't find them or locate them. I find that sequential global preference important for teachers, because if as a teacher I have a strong style myself, and now I have a student who is strong in the opposite style, there's a conflict that can occur, almost looking as if it's personal. That sequential teacher is frustrated by that global student. The global teacher frustrated by the sequential student who seems to never have had enough directions. Again, with global and sequential, I encourage you to look at rotation and empowerment. From a rotation standpoint, looking across a unit of study, our students having the opportunity to sequentially work through a process? And then are they also getting the opportunities to jump in globally? You might look at giving students the options as they begin a research project, and your global students will want to jump in, struggle, wrestle, trial and error, run into failures, and then come back and learn the formulas or learn the strategies that they need to successfully complete the task. Your sequential learners may prefer to take time on the front end to research and organize and understand before they begin to tackle a problem. As instructional leaders and coaches, consider how you might assist your teachers in looking at the practices going on within their classrooms. Are they building rotation in? Are there sufficient student choice options built in to allow the student to be empowered? Again, I want to stress this. This isn't about letting a student dismiss a task because it's of a different style, but the student recognizing, as soon as I take on that task, because of its style, it's going to take more effort on my part. And there'll be another opportunity where I'll be able to work more closely within within my style. As you help teachers understand their own styles, they can begin to look at how they might unconsciously be making decisions in their classrooms that aren't providing an equal opportunity for all learners. I know my shock when I discovered that my auditory and somewhat global preference strongly influenced my own teaching. I recall the shock when my own daughter was young and the teacher said that she should practice her math facts. And so we were driving in the car and I was asking her math facts questions, auditory, and she quickly responded to me that I wasn't being fair. And I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "Well, at school, the teacher holds up a card and she can see the answer." And wow, only then did it dawn on me that when my daughter looked at 3 plus 4, she visually saw 7 as the answer. And I recognized how 20 years earlier, I had been a student whose teacher played math baseball, and she would flash a flashcard up in front of us, and whoever yelled the answer first got to go to first base. And I was good at math, but I could never win that game. And I suddenly understood why, because as soon as I looked at 3 plus 4, I had to say inside my head, 3 plus 4, before I heard that 7 was the answer. Meanwhile, the visual student was yelling 7 and was on his way to first base. And that poor kinesthetic student trying to count on his fingers and toes was stuck in serious problem. But only then did I realize that when I became a teacher, auditory students frequently got a substantial preference in my own classroom. And all the way through to my days of being a graduate instructor teaching teachers, I realized that auditory students who tended to be more verbal in my classroom than perhaps my visual and kinesthetic students did, tended to be seen by me as stronger students. So if we came to the end of the marking period and a person was kind of on the line between a B and an A, and I'd think to myself about the person's contribution to the class, those auditory students move to the top. So assist your teachers in, one, identifying their styles and how it's impacting their choices in the classroom, and two, to look and watch closely student behaviors during certain learning activities where students' preferences can emerge. As a leader, you may also find that your preferences influence the way you observe in a teacher's classroom. I hear things when I'm observing in a teacher's classroom that other observers don't hear, but they tend to see and feel things that I don't see and feel. Let's give the opportunities that we can to everybody. So let's rotate and let's empower. You may find the Kaleidoscope profile available from PLS Third Learning as a easy and cost-effective way to, one, gather data on your staff and jump you into this conversation, or two, a way for teachers to work with their students. Have a great day. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening, folks. I'd love to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.